Do you not think that there are things which you cannot understand, and yet which are? That some people see things that others cannot? But there are things old and new, which must not be contemplated by men's eyes, because they know, or think they know, some things which other men have told them. Ah, it is the fault of our science that it wants to explain all, and if it cannot explain, then it says there is nothing to explain. From Bram Stoker's Dracula. My name is Becca Ryswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago, so settle in as we explore one of my favorites. You may have noticed a non-episode update earlier today. That will be the trailer for my new series starting November 1st, So Legend Says, where I'll be sharing a collection of my favorite stories of the paranormal. If you haven't given the trailer a listen, please do so. There's a link in its notes for where you can go to listen to that series as it releases. I'll also be including that link in this episode's show notes. The goal of the show isn't to convince you one way or the other about the veracity of any of the claims of the stories that I'll be presenting. Instead, it's merely to share a look into what may be out there. I'm very excited to talk about another of my favorite topics, and I hope you find the stories just as much fun as I do. Now, on to the topic at hand. We are back once more for a vampire-themed story. As I said in the last episode, this will be the story of Mercy Brown and the Rhode Island Vampire Panic. One of the possible inspirations for Bram Stoker when he was writing Dracula in 1892, only 5 short years after the events I will be relating. The history of the belief in vampires is a long and winding one, with many possible explanations for the belief in blood-sucking monsters that resemble humans. The story of Mercy Brown touches on one of the more common links, superstitions about disease and death, specifically superstitions used to explain tuberculosis, and offer families and sufferers some form of hope. Before we get into the Brown family and the vampire scare in New England, I should probably explain a few things about tuberculosis, also known as consumption at the time. Odds are, if you've watched a period drama, at some point a character will have coughed into a handkerchief and pulled it away to reveal blood. By the 1800s, tuberculosis was cited as the cause of about 25% of deaths in Europe. So, I suppose statistically, the prevalence of the disease in historical media does make sense. While it is not as prevalent in first world countries today, tuberculosis is by no means eradicated. Although most cases will have no symptoms, known as latent tuberculosis, and only about 10% of those will ever become active. So what exactly is TB? Well, the CDC describes it as, tuberculosis is caused by a bacterium called Mycobacterium tuberculosis. The bacteria usually attack the lungs, but TB bacteria can attack any part of the body, such as the kidney, spine, and brain. Not everyone infected with TB bacteria becomes a sick. As a result, 2 TB-related conditions exist, latent TB infection and TB disease. If not treated properly, TB disease can be fatal. People with latent TB infection do not feel sick, do not have any symptoms, and cannot spread TB to others. The symptoms of TB in the lungs consist of a bad, long-lasting cough, chest pain, and coughing up blood or phlegm, as well as fatigue, weight loss of appetite, chills, fever, and night sweats. TB is transmitted through the air, hence why TB in the lungs is the most common. When someone who has TB speaks or coughs, they expel the bacteria, which others near them may breathe in and then become infected by. This means the places with higher population densities are more likely to have outbreaks, and that when TB does show up, entire families would often come down with it. Interestingly, it cannot be spread by physical contact or by sharing food or drinks. Oddly enough, in the 19th century, tuberculosis was seen as what could be referred to as a romantic disease. The sufferer would have a rather slow decline and eventual death, allowing time for them to get their affairs in order. There was also a belief that those who had the disease had some sort of a higher sensitivity to spiritual things, giving sufferers an air of spiritual purity, which of course led to some bold fashion choices where young, wealthy women would actually pale their skin so they had the ashen look of consumption. By the end of the 1800s, great strides were being taken in understanding and treating TB, though it wasn't until the mid-1900s that the hope of eliminating the disease looked to be able to become a reality. Of course, by the late 80s, a resurgence had appeared, and though tuberculosis is not as prevalent today in most of our day-to-day lives as it had been in the past, there are still thousands of cases tracked every year. All right, now that we know about consumption, it's time to learn about Mercy Brown. In the late 1800s, in Exeter, Rhode Island, there was a farm. It was tended to by the Brown family. A horrible case of consumption swept through the family, taking the mother, Mary Brown, in 1883, and daughter, Mary Olive, only months later. Edwin, the son, grew ill as well, but was sent away to a sanatorium in Colorado Springs, where it was hoped that the clean, cool air and mineral water would cure him. While he was gone, Edwin's sister, Mercy Lena Brown, contracted the disease and passed away on January 19, 1892. That's right, our titular character dies at the beginning of the story. But if we're going to call her a vampire, she does have to be dead after all. Edwin began to feel better, or perhaps he simply wanted to be home with his father in this difficult time, and he returned to Exeter. However, once he got back home, he grew steadily worse. Science was unable to do anything for him, and John's neighbors turned to folktale and superstition for answers. There was a belief that when a disease like consumption ravaged a town or a family, one of the first among the dead were to blame. The deceased became a possessed non-entity, a vampire, who drank the blood of their relatives and neighbors to sustain themselves. Legend claimed that the only way to stop the progression of the disease was by vanquishing the monster in their midst, and the people of Exeter turned to the women of the Brown family. To his credit, the father, George Brown, disregarded the notions at first. He wanted only to leave his wife and daughters to rest in peace and concentrate all his attention on his ailing son. But as Edwin grew worse, George finally relented and allowed relatives and neighbors to exhume his family in an attempt to determine which was the vampire. In the Chestnut Hill Cemetery, behind a local Baptist church, the bodies of Mary Brown and Mary Olive were unearthed nearly a decade after their deaths. Both were found to be adequately decomposed. Nearly only bone remained, and thus they could not be the vampire. History.com's article, The Last American Vampire, by Christopher Klein, describes what was then found. The townspeople then turned their attention to the casket of Mercy Brown, who had died 8 weeks earlier. Accounts differ as to whether Mercy's body had already been buried or if it rested in a crypt until the ground could thaw and undertakers could dig a grave. However, when the lid was lifted off of Mercy's coffin, her body was found on her side. Her face appeared flush, and there was blood in her heart and in her veins. Despite the assurances of the local doctor, Dr. Harold Metcliffe, that this was perfectly normal for how long she had been dead, the people determined that surely Mercy must be the vampire that they sought. The girl's heart and lungs were removed from her body and burned. Once only ashes remained, they were taken to the Brown house and made into a potion for Edwin to drink. It's a little different from how one would kill a vampire in a modern story, though I suppose removing the heart and burning it would work just as well, if not better, than driving a wooden stake through it. Unfortunately, even with the mix of his sister's ashes, Edwin fell victim to his illness, dying on May 2nd, 1892. However, seeing as he was the last in the area to contract consumption, at least for a while, most were convinced that the ritual had worked. It had just been too late for the poor boy. So that's what happened. Mercy Brown's corpse was not the first victim of vampire panic in New England, but she is perhaps the most well-known and is considered to be the last New England vampire. Should you like to learn more about Mercy Brown and the history of vampirism, the book Food for the Dead, On the Trail of New England's Vampires by Michael Bell is an excellent resource. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, you can send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWHpodcast. Mercy Brown is known as New England's last vampire. Her story is just one of many that make up the vampire panic that occurred due to death, disease, and the spread of tuberculosis. The stories that are recounted of unsettled graves and burning corpses are truly astonishing. An interesting part of history, the beliefs that drove these events are remarkable. From desperation and misunderstanding, an American movement to stop vampirism took place. Many were so panicked that they felt they had no choice but to do the unimaginable to their own family members. This came from a NightlySpirits.com article, Mercy Brown and a Vampire Panic.